The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 243.
Fresh looks, traveling with tech.
This is Tony Bemis,
Mary Tomich,
Phil Parada,
and Tom Lawrence.
That's right. We're taking a look at, since half of our podcasters here traveled recently and took technology with them. We are going to be taking a look at some of the things that they encountered and how they dealt with them. And who knows, there'll probably be some helpful tips that come out of this.
Right.
At least how to maybe take your phone apart.
Well, it's going to be two kind of angles at it, because I traveled to Europe and in Italy. Traveling into Europe is a little bit different with technology than traveling into Japan, right? So that's what we're going to go back and forth, talk a little bit what we have, and you guys just...
We'll ask questions.
Yeah, ask questions and pitch in. And I guess I'll start a little bit just from my point of view. I actually flew through Canada. So from Detroit to Toronto is about a four-hour drive. And then we flew from Canada or Toronto to Rome, Italy. And the whole time getting ready to go, everybody's like, oh, no, they're not going to let you take laptops because of batteries, or make sure you have everything wiped. And basically the flights and the places where I was going was friendly. Like, I wasn't really worried about people searching my stuff. You know, I mean, I took a different laptop. I didn't bring my main laptop for two reasons. One was that.
Size.
And size. The other one, yeah, because my main laptop's kind of a big laptop. So I took a little netbook, and I only had limited things that I wanted on it. So in case it did get taken, then I wouldn't be worried about the losing stuff, or it wasn't tied to any of my accounts.
Was that the netbook that
I got from you?
How'd that work? Did that work out okay?
It did. It worked really nice. Okay, I put a solid-state drive in it, and it ran great.
Good. Yeah,
I couldn't upgrade the RAM, but...
I think it had two gigs?
Yeah, 2 gigs of RAM.
Which is fine, I mean, for netbooks, because you can get a netbook distro on there. And,
exactly. I put that one you suggested, Budgie, on there. And it worked really nice. I really liked it.
Excellent.
Yeah. So it was friendly. I mean, I went in. Nobody asked me anything. Other than that, you have to take the laptop out when you go through the metal detector. Other than that, it was all good. I took a camera. It's a Canon 7D. Tom hooked me up with a guy who was selling it. And I had that in my bag, and I had a monopod that I carried on the plane with me. I was thinking they'd make me take it off and either check it or throw it away. And they didn't say anything. You know, I have this 6-foot stick I could beat people with. And and they said, oh, you can take it with you.
Well, don't worry. They take away your knives, but then you can get a knife at the restaurant on the other side of the TSA check.
Yep, right. They took my Leatherman tool. It was in my book bag. I had forgotten about it. So goodbye, nice $80 Leatherman tool.
Oh, man.
You will be missed.
Yeah.
Then I imply that they're going to take it and use it.
Yeah,
TSA.
Right?
You know? They said, no, these get thrown out or whatever. I said, sure.
Right.
eBay.
gotta fix the country's budget somehow.
Yeah.
not to diverge off, but they've caught so many people with loaded guns going through TSA this year, more than average. Yeah. I'm thinking to myself, who in the heck takes a loaded gun in their carry-on baggage?
Jeez.
I know, it's crazy.
Stupid people.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, yeah. So, but anyway, Tony, so back to your trip.
Yeah. No, I mean, so that was basically it. You know, when we were traveling throughout the country, there was no discussion, really, I mean, about any, like, having problems.
Did you use your phone? You know, I think on previous shows we've talked about using U.S.-based phones over in Europe. And,
yeah.
With Google, my phone, because I got that Google, Google phone, Phi, Project Phi, I'm able to use my phone in Europe and call back into the States. I found out, at first I was unsuccessful, but what I had to do is, preface the one, you know, for the, you know, you had the one in the area code. I had to preface it with a zero. And once I did that, I was able to, call back. and I left a message on my home phone. That was just the only test I did. So
yeah. So because I have a Google phone, it's a Nexus 5X, but I'm actually running service through somebody else, through Republic Wireless.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was no international with that.
Okay.
So when I got over there, I went to a Vodafone, and it was $25 for a new SIM. So I got an Italian phone number, but I got 5 gigs of data, 300 minutes, and I could call home with 300 minutes.
And you get an Italian phone number.
And I had an Italian phone number.
Does it end with a vowel?
No.
Did you use your hands to talk?
Right. But the most interesting part was the language barrier. Because you go into a cell place and they're not...
Oh, it's in Italian.
Yeah, they're not...
they're not. They don't speak English.
Really. Yeah.
Darn them.
And so I walked in there and I'm in line. And there's like these two different people. They have two different lines. Mm-hmm. So I'm waiting in one line. They're like, oh, no, the guy over here can speak a little bit of English. You got to wait in his line. Mm-hmm. So then it took me even longer to wait there. But we knew, I mean, we could just talk just enough for him to point out, like, you know, which plan I should get. And then for him to ask me the questions. And when it came to, like, swapping it out and stuff, I asked for a bag to put my old SIM card in. Because when I get home, I plan to put it back in and use it when I go home. And he looked around, couldn't find this tiny little bag to keep it in so I wouldn't lose it. So instead, he grabbed tape, and I taped the SIM card right to the back of the phone. And then, and it was under the case.
Okay.
You could easily take the case off.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I had it taped right here in the back. Actually, you can still see a little bit of the gunk on here.
Oh, yeah,
from the tape.
Yeah.
I taped it right here. And then when I got home, I just peeled the tape off, put my SIM card back in, and it was good to go.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
So you'll save that other one for your next trip.
I could.
Yeah.
I don't know how long they actually are good for.
Well, you didn't use up all the minutes, did you?
I didn't. Actually, it was the data. And the only reason I didn't use all the data...
Because you ran out of time?
No. Oh. Well, part of it. It's because I couldn't use my phone for 3 days, 4 days.
Because it went swimming.
Yeah. I went swimming.
Oh, that's a great... You know, Tom, that's a great segue to the next...
Yeah.
There are some consequences for going swimming with your phone, aren't there, Tony?
That's right.
Believe me, phones in water. I speak from experience.
Yeah,
this
is actually the second time this phone has been in water.
Right.
It's been in two different places, water in Iceland, and it's been water in Italy now.
Yeah. Right.
You know what? Both of those countries start with an I.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, technically it was in... the country of Italy, but in the island of Sicily. But anyway.
A couple eyes in that.
Right.
But anyway, you know, I'm only going to jump in quickly because, you know, once that happened to me, I thought the phone was toast. But then I discovered that I think it could go up to about 50%. It would charge, but the charging indicator was not accurate. And so then we
it stopped working completely. It only showed 50% all the time. No matter if it was 100% charge
or zero
or at zero, it showed 50%.
Okay, that was what it was. It was so inaccurate that it didn't even work.
And after doing a little bit of Googling on it, they said you can replace the battery or just clean the battery lead, and then that usually fixes it.
Yeah, and the best thing is that Tony and I engineered a trade where I got a nice laptop.
Yeah.
And Tony
and
got my own
nice phone.
And now, of course, on my new phone, I have insurance. So, of course, I've never dropped it in water since. But go ahead, Tony.
So I did the whole, like, throw it in rice, waited 3 days. When I pulled it out and I tried charging it, it still wouldn't, it wouldn't boot. So what was happening, it would charge, like, the little red light indicator would come on like it's charging. And with the Nexus phones, after a minute of it charging, after it thinks it has so much power, it will boot for you. Like, you have no option. It just starts up.
Mm-hmm.
And in that process of it booting, it actually turns off the power from the external power, and it boots off of the battery. And then once it gets to a certain point in the boot sequence, then it starts pulling power again from the plug.
Okay.
Well, my battery was so diminished that it just kept on trying to reboot. And... the first few times it showed the Google logo, and then it would just shut off and then start charging. And then a few seconds later, it tried to boot again. It got to the point where I'd plug it in and the little indicator would come on, and then it would go buzz, and then it would die. And then it would buzz and then die. And like every minute it was doing that. I'm like, that's not a good thing.
It's very, very frustrating when that happens. the phone also starts to, the battery heats up so mm-hmm. much that you feel like the phone's just going to burn itself out. And at some point through the through this reboot cycle, you kind of just wish it happens so that you don't have to deal with the problem anymore.
Yeah.
So what I ended up doing is in the hotel room one day, I got a eyeglass screwdriver and used my pocket knife, and I was able to pry the back off, the open up the case, because it's a non-removable battery. They say non-removable. So you pull off like 10 screws, and then you can take the battery out. And, well, I didn't want to actually pull the battery because it's like taped in place, double-sided tape. But I just took the lead off and cleaned the leads because it was all corroded, popped it back in place, charged and came up and started working. So I was deemed a cell phone doctor by my the other students in my class. So that was fun. But it's the same one. Once I got home and had all my tools, I went through and pulled it apart again and re-cleaned all the leads and everything. And then
it just gives you a sense of self-satisfaction, doesn't it?
That's right. I was able to bring it back from the brink of death.
That's right. The Lazarus phone.
Yeah. So then my 5 gigs, I ended up using 3 gigs of it, and I still have 2 gigs sitting on that SIM card.
Mm-hmm.
So if I ever go back to Italy, then hopefully I'll remember or be able to find that SIM card and use it again. That's going to be more of the problem, is finding it.
You still have tape on it?
It's floating around at home somewhere. Okay. No, it's, I don't know if it's in case or something.
It's in a box somewhere.
I've lost it. I probably can't find it.
You just
but
lost
for 25
two
bucks.
Well, it served the purpose.
That's right.
How was coverage over there? Because you went to some remote areas.
It was actually really good. Vodafone, I think, is the biggest in Europe. We were on Italy and Rome, or I went from Rome to Naples. I got it when I was in Naples, and it did. When I used it throughout Naples, it was had great coverage, and in Sicily also was good coverage. And then the other one is, I think Wind is the other like popular or big carrier over there. And my wife had a Verizon phone, and she paid for the international plan. It was like $150 or something $80 for 250 megs and 200 minutes. And it was $80.
Wow.
And she got to use her own phone number, so that was nice. But other than that, it was she was on the Wind network,
mm-hmm.
And it worked. But within 5 days, we had used it all up and then couldn't use it anymore. And so then we switched over using my phone, except for when it was in the bag of rice.
So what happened to the rice?
I threw it out.
Okay.
It would have been chlorine laden if we tried to eat it.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah.
All right.
I used that netbook. And I dumped pictures from our cameras and from the phones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the biggest problem was, and I don't know if, I think it was the distro that I was using, because I've gotten my wife's phone to work on my main laptop before, but I couldn't dump her phone. And I went through and installed every iPhone package of whatever I could find.
Mm-hmm.
And I Googled, and I spent 4 days of, like, or 2 hours every night for 4 days. Messing with it. I couldn't get it to recognize. It would recognize it. It would say it's paired or recognize, and there's this like code that it shows on there, and the phone says it's recognized, but it would never mount as a file system.
Hmm.
So.
Well, you know how I solved that problem is I put KDE Connect on my phone and KDE Connect on my laptop.
Do they have it for iPhone? Do they have KDE Connect for?
Oh, there's your problem.
I should have thought of it. But can you do file system? Is it file system? Like, can you pull files off of your phone?
No, but
you can
pull files off this phone with KDE Connect, and you also it also gives you all your notifications, Twitter notifications.
iPhone has so many restrictions on that too.
Tells you how much your battery, how much battery you got left.
Hmm.
Yeah, it does. And not only that, if your phone is somewhere in the house and you don't know where it is. It has a little thing here where you can You can hit KDE Connect, and it will send out a little pulse to ring your phone. And then you, believe me, I used it once. It's great.
That's nice.
So
it feels like I don't know where my phone is now.
That's so. I asked my wife, and she gets mad at me because I can't remember where I put things: keys, wallet, watch, my butt. Glad it's attached.
I was going to say it's right there. So, well, Tony, that's pretty interesting.
So. Yeah, so I ended up having to use
Wi-Fi.
A friend's laptop for the for our iPhone.
Okay.
Wi-Fi was okay. Like, well, what was neat is everywhere you go, there was Wi-Fi. So every restaurant we went to, they had Wi-Fi. Every grocery stores had Wi-Fi. You know, gas stations had Wi-Fi.
Did the towns and cities have Wi-Fi too?
No. Okay. Not that I saw. I didn't see any like public Wi-Fi like that. It's just each of the restaurants we went to. One restaurant wanted to take my phone into a different room to punch in the code and then come back. I'm like, no. They're like, what are you talking about? I was like, you're not taking my phone. He's like, really? He looks at the other guy. Is this guy crazy? I'm like, no, you're not taking my phone.
Just he's just an American.
I said, write down what the code is and I'll put it in. He's like, oh, all right. And he had to like,
it's not like you can't just get the password out. Do they take your phone and remove their Wi-Fi connection from your phone when you leave? Like, that's part of the checkout.
Or was it a really long one and he wanted to go in the back and read it off the wall and type it in?
It wasn't that long, but I think that's what they do. They have to go back and it was, like, written on the wall in the kitchen. And
no one wants to rewrite it on a slip of paper.
Yeah. No, it wasn't that long. It was, like, the name of the city and some, or the name of the restaurant plus, like, the year or something like that. Oh. So I don't understand why he didn't want
to. They
do
made
it,
a big deal about it, anyways.
Yeah. But otherwise, everywhere else, all the restaurants either had a placard on the wall everywhere, like Wi-Fi password, or they had, or it was in the menu, and so that was really cool.
I like places that change the password based on the dish they have available. It's their special. I've been to a few places like that, and I thought that was clever.
Yeah, that is clever.
See, the Connect, and our special today is beans or whatever, you know.
And it kind of prevents the. Parking lot surfers.
Yes. We had parking lot surfers here, and we just changed the password. One of the guys was bold enough to come in and go, your Wi-Fi quit working. Yeah, we're having problems with it. Because he's parking in a parking lot just to use her Wi-Fi. We're like,
wow. Oh, my God. He comes in and says your Wi-Fi is not working?
Yeah, we're working on it. He was watching the sports games, and he thought our parking lot was the place to do that. Because we can see the traffic. We know where we're going.
You could have used Squid to point him at something nefarious.
We like did.
Not sports.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. We did consider it, but we decided we had work to do. And messing with a guy in the parking lot was not on the list.
Yeah.
The desire was there.
Is that one of the butt throwers?
Oh, the butt throwers. Yes.
Cigarette butts.
Cigarette butts. That actually seems to have ended. They finally quit coming in our parking lot.
That's good.
They got in trouble with management because management was on our side. So we won't segue into that. It's a whole other discussion.
All right.
Back to the tech topics. So Wi-Fi wasn't bad. Lots of Wi-Fi at restaurants, which is cool. Yeah.
Except for like two of the hotels we went to had really bad Wi-Fi. Oh. So that sucked. At night, we tried to call our kids, and it didn't. It worked like half the time. But
you know what, though? When I was in Mackinac last, I had the same problem. They had awful Wi-Fi. And,
yeah.
I had to go downstairs to the lobby each time because the hotel just, their Wi-Fi was broken. They had a whole mesh network set up of Netgears, and they were not configured properly.
Oh. Yeah. Should have offered. You know, for a fee, I can fix this for you.
I can fix this for you.
I did ask him who does IT and ask him if I could fix it because they didn't want to just log into it and start resetting it. And they use some guy who comes out there to the island, and he only comes out like once a month or something. So when stuff goes wrong, and I'm like, this is such an awful network.
Oh.
Yeah.
I actually did help them. The first hotel we were at, I did help them fix their Wi-Fi. They, because I noticed that I was getting on the same SSID, it would come up, and one would be encrypted, you know, with a lock, and the other one would be open. Mm-hmm. I'm like, they shouldn't be doing that, you know, and then it, like, causes havoc with my laptop connecting. And
yeah.
So that was one of the problems why it was so bad. And then so one day we were standing there, we were all getting together in the lobby, and we're about to leave, And I mentioned it to him, and he's like, no, I'll show you. And he's like, no, it's not. It's encrypted. No, I'm like, I know it's not. He's like, no, come here. And he starts showing me. He says, it's right there. See, the password's in there. But it wasn't checked to use it. It was left open. It's like, no, you need to hit that check. He's like, oh. And then he checked, like, four of the other access points they have. And it was like every other one was turned, was had the wrong setting.
Love misconfigured equipment.
So, yeah.
What is, broadcast this, but when you get a chance, if I'd like to get on your wireless with my phone. So, you know, you can.
Oh, talking about wireless here. I was across the street giving blood, and his Wi-Fi would come up, but it was too weak to connect to it. Anyway.
How much blood did you give? Pint?
A pint.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm up to 2.5 gallons.
Low? Oh. Really? Do you get some kind of an award?
You get a pin. Every gallon, you get a pin.
Nice going, Tony. That's very
two
nice.
Pins so
I,
far.
Yeah, I can't. For medical reasons, I can't give blood.
Oh, yeah. In my
I don't have any. No.
Every time I go to schedule, they say, can you convince, or can you have some a friend come with you? I'm like, my wife's the only person that I could convince to do it, and she can't.
Mm-hmm. They're going to come up with fake blood pretty soon. You know, I mean, artificial blood.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I've read stuff on it. I mean, it's not, I don't think it's ready for prime time, but. Yeah.
So, Phil, how was your experience?
Yeah.
So, I took the stereotypical paranoid traveler approach. I had my laptops with BIOS passwords and then encrypted file systems, encrypted home directories. I then took all of my personal information and Git repositories off because I could always just reclone that. I then dumped my SSH keys and VMs onto a small little micro SD card, which I put which the backup was encrypted, and then I encrypted the card itself with Lux, and I put that little card into a spy coin. And you could also cut out like a hole in like an eraser, and then just put your micro SD card in there, put the top of the eraser that you cut back in, and you hide that in a bag. I wasn't concerned about Canadian border crossing or Japanese border guards. I was concerned about coming back into America because I didn't want the TSA to search through my devices. Mm-hmm. We powered down our phones. We took the batteries out, put them in, put them hidden in our luggage. But you know they could still see that.
Right.
But when they turned our phones on, hey, what's the passwords for these? Well, we don't know. So coming back into America is the scary portion for me. We didn't have any trouble though, so. Even though we prepared for it, we were safe this time. But
but next time,
I brought a helmet with me for our United flight. No one tried to take me off, so that's good.
Are you serious?
No. Partially,
he was being prepared though.
I got to fly business class on a flight from Chicago to Vancouver. I don't know how that happened, but it was the nicest flight that I've ever had. It was so comfortable. The flight attendant said to me, "Oh no, sir, you're sitting up here." I'm like, "Wait, me? What?" So that was enjoyable.
Did you get free booze?
We did. We got free little bottles of wine. Mm-hmm. And if you asked, you could get more. So I kept asking, and that was fun.
On the Chicago to Vancouver flight?
Yes.
Yeah.
Long flight dinners are actually pretty decent. I took a liking to them. We got to see movies in the backs of every single seat, so that was enjoyable.
That's how mine was, too.
Did a little bit of reading, not too much, mostly sleeping. Coming back from Japan, I had a 9.5 hour flight next to the other tallest person on the airplane. It was a constant battle of
elbows.
Our elbows, our knees, and that was extremely uncomfortable. But
you didn't break out into a fight.
No, we didn't.
You know, my flight back was 8 hours from Rome to Montreal, and it was the TV in front of mine.
It was broken.
It wouldn't boot up. Like, it'd show the boot screen, and it would come up to the main interface where you can start, but the touch screen wouldn't work at all, so I couldn't do anything on it. And then I had my laptop with me. I'm like, okay, I'll just pull my laptop. I go to plug in to charge because they have things you could charge your phone, your laptop and your phone mm-hmm. right there on the back of the seat. That was broken too.
So it's like
so I couldn't. So I had about 2 hours I could use my laptop. And then that was it. And then I had 6 hours of napping and I had to get paper out and actually read.
Oh, my
from
God.
Paper. In Japan, I got no cell service, even though I have Project Fi. I don't know if I was doing something wrong with my phone, but I had no bars. However, there is Wi-Fi in every single one of the cities of Tokyo. So Tokyo wow. is something like 52 or 58 square miles, 31 million people.
Oh,
now think about that, that square miles, because Detroit is 134 square miles.
Okay, so it's
think about
it's
that.
Way.
Yeah, it's and there's like 600,000 people that live in the city of Detroit. And
so
Tokyo is half the size and. Ground, what, yeah, how many million did you say?
I think there's 31 million people there.
31 million. Holy cow.
On a clear morning, you could step out.
And step on someone.
Yeah. you could step out onto like a deck of a tall building, and you could see buildings until the horizon. Wow. And then the buildings kept going past that. But there was Wi-Fi everywhere, and to get around not having cell service, they have Japanese people have these tiny little Wi-Fi devices that you just carry in your pocket. It's called pocket Wi-Fi, and you pay a cell bill every month for that. There's not much data on it, but it'll allow you to make phone calls and stuff.
Oh.
So our place let us carry one of those for a week. Mm-hmm. And so I just had my phone connected to that Wi-Fi so I could look things up, use maps, nice. Use translations. Every bar, restaurant, city, high-rise, little underground shops, there was Wi-Fi everywhere.
Yeah.
So we were covered on that end. My wife's phone, she has to use a SIM card, and she didn't want to carry the pocket Wi-Fi. So... You can buy a new SIM card with like 5 gigs of data on it, or things like that. At the airport, you'll pay up to $100 depending on quantity of data that you want, or you can wait a little bit and find a BIC camera store, and you can get the same exact card for half the price.
Yeah.
So she got. Her SIM card for $40 instead of like $80 or $90 at the airport.
Nice.
So just waiting a little bit and having a map of the area you need to go to before you actually land is extremely important.
Yeah.
Getting around all the subways and trains and buses and stuff, the first 2 days was kind of confusing, but after that it just felt everything felt normal. Except I couldn't read anything. But
right.
you can start figuring out.
But you can look
this.
At the pictures.
Yes, you
and
can.
And they have a lot of candy over there.
Yeah,
oh, you can't. Well, they have a lot of interesting stuff. I mean,
oh,
they
did. Yeah, I had so much food there. We had the greenest matcha ice cream, I guess, in the world. So there was this tiny little shop, and they had plain. It was just called plain ice cream. It was just white. I think it was only milk and sugar. And then they had a gradient. It went from brown matcha, like very, very light brown, all the way up to this deep, super rich green color. And we got to try all of it.
What is matcha?
That matcha is what makes green tea.
Oh.
It's a leaf that they grind up into a powder.
Hmm.
Also took a liking to green tea.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Now, but was it you or was it someone else that told me, you know, the green tea over here is not like the green tea over there?
It is not.
Freshness, I think.
Yes.
That's.
There's also this stuff called rice tea, I think. It's brown. You get it when you're at.
Brown or white? No.
Yep.
Sorry.
Instead of putting water out at tables in restaurants and stuff, they'll put out this rice tea, and you just drink it. It tastes kind of, no, barley tea. Sorry, that's what it is.
Mm. Oh, barley.
It tastes kind of weird. I wasn't really a fan of it, mm-hmm. but when there's nothing else to drink, it did the trick.
And it's probably vitamins in it. Isn't that one of the ingredients in beer?
Barley is, yeah.
Yep.
There you go.
Yep.
So it was sort of like proto beer you drank.
Interesting.
Non-fermented.
Yeah.
Yeah, non-fermented. Yeah.
Interesting thing about beer. Beer costs more in Japan than hard liquor. So mm. you can get a drink called Sochu, and I believe I mentioned this the last time, but it's a little bit of beer that you can pour the equivalent of about two shots of hard liquor into, and then you mix it together, and you drink it like that. It was fun.
we had a lot of wine, obviously, in Italy. We had a lot of wine, and wine was cheaper than pop.
Whoa.
And, like, to get a Coke, well, I mean, at restaurants, it's definitely, and it definitely was cheaper than beer. Like, beer was a $6, you know, can of beer.
Yep.
And wine was, like, $2 for a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. You know, we were traveling with 12 people, so half the time it was at least 6 of us eating anywhere we went. So we'd get 2 bottles of wine at least, and that would just start us out. And it was like $10 for a bottle of wine in a restaurant. You know, if we go to the grocery store, it was $3,
yeah.
or euros, I'm sorry, €3 and for a bottle of wine. And that was, and it was good stuff. It wasn't like the really cheap, bad stuff that we have around here for $5, you know? But you're right. And then for bottled water, they would never bring us that tap water. It was always bottled water at the restaurant. And it would be maybe €3 for a liter of water. And you always had to tell them whether you want no gas or gas water, and basically like soda water.
Oh, okay.
And so everybody there assumed you want soda water unless you say no gas. So.
How do you say it in Italian?
No gas, yeah.
It's natural, no gas. That's and they understood that part, you know.
But you have to do this with your hand. You kind of put your purse, the end of your fingers together, and wave them around.
Yeah, they always say if you don't use your hands, they don't understand you. No matter what you say, if there's no hand movements, they don't understand.
How awesome was it to not have to tip when you were out of America?
Yeah, definitely. They didn't expect tips like we do around here.
And yeah, same thing in
I think
Iceland.
We still tipped a little bit, but I mean, like maybe 10%. I'm normally here, like a low tip is 20%, you know?
Yeah.
And so there, I mean, we were tipping 10% and they thought we were awesome, you know?
We didn't have to tip at all, and we got fantastic service, and that's just what is expected. You don't tip in Japan. It was
because they're well paid.
So how are people in Japan about being on their phone? Is it like we have here? Is they're playing with their phone all the time and they're
yep. When you're on the subway or the train or the bus, people have their phones, have comics, they're watching videos, listening to music, I guess reading. Not comics, manga. it felt just like America, except I couldn't read anything. it was interesting. I didn't feel out of place.
Despite the fact you towered over everyone?
Yeah.
But Phil's kind of tall anyway, for those of you who don't know. So he's.
I wore very bright colored shirts. I'm 6'3", by the way. and my group could always spot me in the crowds, and that was fun.
Well, that's funny.
Hmm.
But the reason for going that we went over to Japan was for the Linux Foundation had the Open Source Summit. And this was at the Ariake Conference Center. And they also, at the same time, had the Automotive Linux conference. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I got to see new technology that could be going into vehicles in the coming years. I got to talk to people from Gentoo, Red Hat, SUSE. saw far too many presentations on Kubernetes, which is a container orchestration tool. Kubernetes is this entirely gigantic monster of a project. It's like OpenShift. No, not OpenShift. It's like OpenStack in the amount of moving pieces, except you don't need to have a dedicated engineering team to run Kubernetes like you do with OpenStack.
Wow.
So that was really interesting, getting to see other container-related tools other than like HashiCorp's Nomad or Docker Swarm, which I can't stand.
Hmm.
So that was interesting. I got a lot of stickers.
Yes, you did.
I will bring them all so I can give you a bunch next time that we convene for a podcast.
You gave us a bunch already.
Not Tony yet.
Oh, not Tony.
No, I got I got Let's Encrypt today.
Yeah.
So I put it on my laptop.
I was encrypting all of the Japanese cities that we went to. I also encrypted up north Michigan and Mackinac City by slapping Let's Encrypt stickers everywhere.
Oh.
I filled up the trail of Let's Encrypt stickers.
Awesome. That's cool.
Yeah, excellent. All right, so...
What else we got?
Oh, so you know you're talking about encrypting everything and bringing it back and making sure... I went kind of on the other end. Is I just made sure I didn't have anything on my systems, and I left it unencrypted, so that it wasn't like, oh, you have this encrypted, then now you need to, you know, you're hiding something from us. So, you know, I had everything available on my own cloud, so if I needed to get to my paperwork and stuff, then I would be able to log in through the website and get to that. But it just didn't. I didn't store it on my local device for them to be able to search through or anything. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering what encryption is. I heard you say Lux. That's the same one I use to encrypt all my stuff as well. It's such a great tool, and it's very cross-compatible across all the platforms on Linux.
Mm-hmm.
It's like built into it. It's a kernel built-in driver, isn't it?
Off the top of my head, I don't know, so yeah. I can't speak accurately.
I don't think I have to add anything extra to any modern machine. It just recognizes Lux encryption right off the bat.
Yep.
Yeah, I know in Ubuntu, like I've used Ubuntu and Mint, and it's like that. It just works.
Yeah. Really thin. It was missing like Lux. Like
they
didn't.
No.
Some of the base utilities
are
missing LuxWorks.
I can mount
my Lux drives.
And you can install.
I installed them. They just did a really minimal install. They're like, these are the bases that you need. Everything else you have to type in, apt-get install, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lux is really easy to use. The part that's hard is when you forget the password and you forget. You forget the hint that you wrote in your notebook.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Oh, you're dead in the water.
So that was a frustrating good, like, 30 minutes of retrying passwords and rebooting.
Oh, no. Yeah.
That doesn't
happen. What about Linux in the wild? Did you see much of that over there?
All of the in-dash monitors on the airplane, I believe, use it.
Yeah, it was the same with us.
Same with on trains. Over in Japan, when you've got the advertisement LEDs, I guess, or the advertisement screens that flip through ads and information about the train ride and stuff. But other than that, no, I didn't really see anything. Which means that there's the kernel just hiding and doing its job correctly.
Yeah.
I didn't see very much Microsoft stuff, but it could also just be hidden doing its job correctly. How about you?
In the airplane, I saw it there. And because I saw it on mine reboot many times because I had them reset my system. But other than that, it's... Either they didn't have as much technology out and about as much as I expected. You know, like digital signage and stuff was limited. I mean, there was a few stores that had it. But really, if everything's working properly, you're not going to know because you're seeing the advertisement, not the operating system.
Yep. There was so many ads everywhere. It was crazy. It was like the movie They Live. on steroids just because of the amount of people there and the amount of different companies advertising. You would have advertisements on top of advertisements on top of advertisements. But to me, I didn't know what any of it was, so it was just pretty lights and stuff. there was a temple in one of the cities. So every city was a little bit different from each other. So you had one city that was kind of like ancient Japan. There was gardens and old style temples and fountains and the person with the rake pulling it through the sand to make nice clean lines.
All zen.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then you could go to a completely different city and it would be the technology city. I believe that one was called Akihabara. And there would be multi-level technology stores. So those are called camera stores because they sell like cameras from tiny little phones all the way up to gigantic lenses that cost $300,000 American dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could touch them and look through them. Mm. And then
and they're white with a red little ring around because they're made by Canon.
but
they're neat.
Yeah.
I've used them.
every store was multi-leveled. So you would walk into a store on the first floor, let's say you would see TVs. Second floor, you would see toys for kids and stuff. The next floor, you could see books. Floor after that would be cameras or whatnot. You get the point. But every building was like that. If you could put up a building in Japan, zoning is so weird that whatever shape you could fit a building into, they let you.
Really?
And then you just build up from there. We had restaurant buildings that had restaurants on top of restaurants on top of restaurants. The video game Pokemon started to make a lot more sense when you would go into the big Pokemon cities and you would go into these high rises of just shops. So that was kind of cool. It was eye-opening to see that, oh, that's why they did that. And then in one of the cities, we found the technology shrine. So it looked like an ancient Japanese temple, except you could...
It was made of circuit board.
Yes, you could...
it was?
You could say a little prayer and offer up a donation. So I offered up a small little 3-foot Ethernet cable. And then you could pay to get a little souvenir to say, hey, you were here. The one that I got was a small sticker sheet that looked like printed circuit board. I stuck one on my laptop, one on a piece of work gear to protect the work gear from any evil hackers or malicious code.
That's cool.
There was a city that had a shrine dedicated to cats, and there was cats just laying all across the shrine, just walking along the street, coming up to it. It was interesting.
Wow.
And anything you could think of a shrine for, it was probably there.
So what are the prices of technology, like stereos or something, or phones? Were they relatively the same, or were they cheaper or more expensive?
Everything seemed... Prices were cheaper than American, for sure. So if something was 100 yen, that would be a little less than a dollar.
Hmm.
But you didn't usually pay for things in the 100 increments. So carrying 1,000 yen was 10 bucks. But or a little less than $10. And that felt normal. You just moved a decimal point.
Yeah.
And their currency's been depressed for, I think, quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But like a phone, like the, you know, Nexus 5 or whatever the next generation, it's, you know, it's what, $400 almost, or $500 here?
You would pay equivalent
in
yen.
Okay.
It's all relative. Yeah. Like the gigantic Canon lens that was a good 3 feet long. And you had to have like a team of strong men carry it on their backs and like a pack mule to drag Sherpa. The thing.
Sherpa.
It was something like a million yen.
Wow.
But for good reason, because it'll probably take the best pictures anyone's ever seen.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, by where I went, you know, in the cities, there are a bunch of little shops, and they were all like the specialized, you know, so there weren't like multi-level stores. It was all like...
You mean technology shops or just general shops?
Actually, I saw maybe one or two technology shops. Okay. Yeah, I didn't, and then I saw a bunch of cell phone shops. But other than that, there wasn't a whole lot of technology shops. Mm-hmm. So it was all like, you know, clothing stores and restaurants and ice cream shops or gelato shops. That was all over the place. So most of it was cash and carry, but there just, you know, in that kind of shops, you don't really need a lot of technology other than the cash register. But that's a surprise. I didn't see as many like tech shops. Like, where do you buy a laptop? Where, you know, I mean, I know we see you write cell phones, but you know, I just didn't see them. And I guess I didn't ask anybody the question, but
in Akihabara, they also call it the electric city. You could buy a laptop on any street corner.
Really?
And
they weren't hot. No.
So in that particular city, you get laptops, phones, whatever you needed down any one of the many, many sprawling streets. Mm-hmm. And then you take a 5-minute train ride and you're in a completely different world.
Wow.
Very, very interesting.
Hmm. That's cool.
I'm done. We haven't... Sorry.
Tom looks surprised over there.
I'm also...
Tom, we're all looking at you.
So when you asked me, just side note, when you asked me for the Wi-Fi password, I tried pulling it up and then I had to find it out on my computer. But I think you know what the beeping noise was. The RAID array that's been dying, died.
Oh,
and
my
all
God.
my processors on my virtual stack are pinned because they're trying to write to a drive that doesn't exist.
Rest in peace.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I knew this. This was actually on today's project list because we've seen the errors on it and we ignored them.
There's that RAID in peace. Yeah.
RAID in peace. So my RAID is in pieces right now.
Oh, wow.
We knew it. This is the second SSD RAID array to fail, by the way.
How long has it been operating?
Oh, it's a few years. So
oh, okay.
It's not new or anything.
But what kind of controller card?
Onboard motherboard one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're using the Linux RAID MADM module and
MDADM.
MDADM. Yeah.
Software RAID.
Yeah, software RAID.
Okay.
We've had problems with it before. This is why we're moving everything to the virtual stack and the FreeNAS because it just works way better with ZFS. I've had this scenario happen before. We get the errors, and within a few days of the errors, we know what's happening next.
And thank you for that, by the way, too, because I did get my phone on there. I got they're connected via KDE Connect. And remember I had said, and I know we're probably getting ready to wrap up this episode, but I mentioned that your phone, as long as your phone
computer,
your laptop are on the same network at home, you can find it. Because
as long as you've lost your phone at home, Phil, you can use...
See? I just said ring my phone off KDE Connect, and notice what it says on there.
Found.
It says found. Well,
only when you find it.
Only
until
you find it, yeah. So
anyway. I have this thing, when I lose my phone, the way I find it.
You call it.
Yeah. I go to my phone, my wife's phone, and say, call my phone. And then we walk around the house until I can hear it.
I use the...
And you can do that, too.
Yeah.
I have the Google tracking tools for my devices. And my friend has it, too, and he actually was able to track someone who stole his phone from the beach a couple weeks ago.
Wow.
He was able to track where they went, and he found his phone, and he got it back. They actually chucked it out the window after a little. He has a password on it, so they got aggravated, and they threw it out the window, and they got his phone.
Wow.
He used Google to figure out where it was left.
No, pretty good.
They did crack the screen when they threw it, but he found it.
So do you have to keep your location on for that, though?
Yeah. So
okay. I turn mine off at every possible moment.
Well, we're talking about a Google phone. Come on.
Yeah, they didn't turn it off. They just told me it did.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that.
All right.
You're security conscious.
All right. Yeah. So I guess we're wrapping it up.
Wrapping it up, yeah.
All right. So
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 243.
Fresh looks, tech, and travel. Or traveling with technology.
Yeah.
That's right.
So this is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
Phil Parada.
And Tom Lawrence.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
All right. Say goodbye to the YouTubers.
All right. Bye.
YouTube.
Hi, YouTubers.
Followers.
I'm going to go fix my Raider A.
Ha 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 ha.